we're diagnosing and osteoporosis and treating osteoporosis way too late. You know, the problem is our medical guidelines say that you should have a bone mineral density scan at the age of 65 in women. Generally, if we get a snapshot in time around the menopause, we know how much bone you've kind of formed, or if you're already sort of on the decline, where are you on that trajectory? What I always recommend too, in terms of, you know, the types of exercise that can help, again, build bone, prevent bone loss.
Dr. Christy DeSapri is joining me on the podcast today. She is a board certified internist that specializes in midlife women's health, specifically osteoporosis.
The FSH level starts to go up, and we know that the bone loss is starting then. Being proactive about the symptoms and also signs in the menopause and perimenopause is really...
You have said before that the prevention and treatment of osteoporosis is really underappreciated in midlife women's health issues. I'd love for you to expand on that and maybe explain a little bit more about why that is. Why is this underappreciated right now?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Megan, for having me. I think this is such a obviously timely topic. I mean, we always think about menopause and midlife as changes in so many different body systems. And so when I see patients and when I do lectures to, you know, even academic and other doctors, we think about, you know, the gynecologic changes and the bleeding, and we think about hormonal changes and hot flashes, and we think about changes in libido and sexual health. But oftentimes things like musculoskeletal symptoms, things like bone loss, these are symptoms that are not always, you know, equated with bone density and with midlife and with changes. And all of these things, I think obviously all, you know, fit together so nicely to when we think about the constellation of changes and signs and both symptoms of menopause. And why I think bone health is underappreciated is because we don't have, you know, our bones calling out to us saying, we're losing estrogen, our FSH is increasing. If you're of a, you know, certain ethnicities or certain family histories or medical conditions, we're not always with specialists that might be equating that bone loss is very common with these conditions. And then we, you know, we'll layer on menopause and midlife and loss of sex hormones. And then we're ending up with diagnosis of osteoporosis, osteopenia, or the outcome that we're trying to prevent, which is fractures, you know, way too late. And so we're diagnosing and osteoporosis and treating osteoporosis, in my opinion, and I think of many, you know, opinion of, you know, gynecologists and midlife women's health practitioners way too late. So we need to kind of move this conversation earlier. And that's what we're doing here today too.
How early do we need to be talking about this?
Oh my goodness. I would say, I mean, the reason why when we look again, like let's talk about bone physiology. I know no one likes to talk about this except for me. I love it. I love this stuff.
But, I love it too.
I know. As I think as science, and you know what I find is my patients love it too when they understand like why I'm like, we should do a DEXA at, you know, at midlife, like whether you're in your perimenopause in your 40s or early 50s. You know, the problem is our medical guidelines, you know, really, again, say that you should have a bone mineral density scan at the age of 65 in women, or earlier in the postmenopause if you have risk factors for bone loss. And like I said, you know, we could talk for an hour about risk factors for bone loss. Again, age at menopause, family history, body weight, ethnicity, certain medications, medicines, surgical history, all of these, you know, can play a role into how much bone you've gained through your teens, 20s, 30s, and then how much bone is lost during the menopause transition. And so, you know, generally, if we sort of get a snapshot in time around the menopause, we know how much bone you've kind of formed, or if you're already sort of on the decline, where are you on that trajectory? So we can either stop it, we can talk about lifestyle things, we can talk about potentially hormones, we can talk about what you do with women and what I always recommend too in terms of, you know, the types of exercise that can help, again, build bone, prevent bone loss, help us with our confidence, our coordination, our mobility. And so again, when you look at the medical guidelines, it's 65 and older or women who have risk factors, and you can do your own risk factor assessment by, you know, there's some online freely accessible tool called the FRAX score. That's okay. It more predicts fractures rather than who's going to develop osteoporosis. You can ask your clinician or doctor. And in my mind, in my practice, which is, I have a practice that I see both virtual patients across the country, but I also have an office in Winnetka, Illinois, which is outside of Chicago, where I have a DEXA scanner. And unless you don't want a DEXA, all of the patients who see me get a DEXA for body mass, for bone mineral density, bone quality measurement. That helps us detect, determine strength. And then sometimes we do body composition if people want that, you know, women want that as well. But again, I think that just gives us such a snapshot, a great snapshot for where we're at now, because so many women, as we talked about before we started, already have low bone mass, which is the term osteopenia or osteoporosis, even at their first DEXA. So the statistics are shocking that, you know, 20 to 30% of women have osteopenia. Another 20 to 30% might have osteoporosis based on the T-score diagnosis of osteoporosis at the time of their first DEXA. So this is huge numbers. And again, it helps us going forward. You know, if we're going to be thinking about women living into their 80s or beyond, bone loss is inevitable, just like some muscle loss is inevitable, just like some of our changes in our eyes, our vaginal changes, or all of these things are inevitable, but doesn't mean we have to live with them, right? We can do things to alter the course and the trajectory, so we're not getting those outcomes of fractures and bone loss. And those have significant, we'll talk about maybe, significant changes in women's lives.
You said something a minute ago that I want to park on for a second. You said that 20% of the women that come in and get a DEXA scan discover that they already have some osteopenia. First of all, explain what osteopenia is in comparison to osteoporosis. And then it almost sounds like, like they get the scan and realize it's already happening. So what can we do to have that first scan and get great results? And then we can talk about what we can do if that is the result. But start with, what is osteopenia?
So again, when we think about like bone as sort of a continuum, you know, we can have normal bone mass, which means, again, the bone mineral density, the strength of the bone, which we calculate through a DEXA scan, which is a low radiation, low cost scan, painless. This looks at your spine, your hip, sometimes also your wrist. And it really, again, sort of is a the best snapshot we have right now for determining bone strength. And oftentimes when we have a little bit of low bone density on those scans, what osteopenia is when we sort of compare your bones to someone of a peak bone mass. So we think peak bone mass is around 20s to 30s for most women. And this has been validated, you know, many times over. And we have the NHANES database, which looks at, again, over 100 million women looking at, or 100,000 women, I should say, looking at sort of, you know, norms and looking at when our bone mineral density drops and we have a certain T score, which is a standard deviation from normal. And we look at our Z scores, which is comparing your bone mineral density to someone of a similar age, race, and sex match. These are sort of the ways that we can use these standard deviations to see how far off the deviation from a quote unquote normal bone density is. And this helps us because one of the risk factors for fractures is low bone mass. So we know these are directly correlated. So the fact of the matter is that when bone mineral density drops below minus 2.5, let's say, which is the T-score diagnosis for osteoporosis, you know, a third of women or more would have sustained an osteoporosis-related fracture. And so these are closely related. Obviously, there's so many other risk factors for fractures and low bone mineral density, as we've talked about, malabsorption, fall risk, other conditions that might accelerate bone loss or fall risk or fractures. So this is why this is a maybe sometimes a little bit, you know, more complex than just get a bone density and, you know, figure this out on your own. And so osteopenia is so common because, again, we might not even achieve our peak bone mass. Potentially there's, you know, genetics plays a huge role in that. So if your mother has osteoporosis or has had a fracture, or you are certain ethnicities like Caucasian or Asian might have lower bone densities to start with. If your body weight is less than 127 pounds, if you've had, you know, struggles with either anorexia, restrictive eating, over-exercising, low body weight, malabsorption of certain vitamins, calcium, vitamin D, or early menopause, again, where we lose our sex hormones earlier. These are all the reasons why you've never achieved a peak bone mass that might be quote unquote normal based on the large volume of women that we've scanned from their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way, you know, up to their 80s or 90s. So again, we have to look individually and then over the population, what is your T-score, Z-score range sort of fall into?
So I had a DEXA scan years ago when I was in college, actually. I was amenorrheic, so that means that I was, for whatever reason, not menstruating, and my a little history of some eating disorder there, and I was no longer menstruating. So my doctor at the time scheduled me to have a DEXA scan. Now, why would, if I'm not menstruating, why would the doctor be concerned about my bone density at that point? Fortunately, it was fine. But just to kind of bring this into like, okay, this is a practical situation. Why would it matter whether or not I'm menstruating that my bones could be potentially not as dense as they should be?
So, and this, you bring up a really good point. Like personally, thank you for sharing. I mean, there, I see a lot of athletes and collegiate athletes and, you know, recreational athletes and even, you know, women who, you know, say like, oh, I'm developing a stress fracture and someone told me to get a bone density. And so again, this is the too late, you know, diagnosis in my mind. So someone had the foresight to kind of, you know, think about that for you. Unfortunately, our medical guidelines don't, you know, say unless you've had, you know, chronic amenorrhea, meaning loss of periods for more than like 6 months, and we think you're just severely either having a relative energy deficiency syndrome where your sort of your energy goals and are not being met, and you're having sort of excess, you know, demands on your body, whether that be exercise, whether that be caloric restriction. And what happens there with less of the menstrual cycle is that we know that the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the ovaries, which are again sort of all closely connected, we call it the hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis. We know that when we are overexercising, undernourishing, that whole axis kind of shuts down, meaning from the brain to the ovaries, we're just not producing enough estrogen. And then that negatively feeds back. And then without enough estrogen, where we have estrogen receptors all over our bodies, we know that things like in the brain, in the bones, in the muscles, et cetera, we're just not seeing that estrogen level that needs to be able to support a menstrual cycle, also support the rest of our, you know, functions and support. As bones are exquisitely estrogen sensitive. And then people might get hair loss and more, again, more fractures like stress fractures or insufficiency fractures from both, you know, overexercising, potentially lowered levels of caloric intake, protein, calcium, and then just loss of sex hormones. And so this is something that we see. And again, the restoration for a lot of these things is, you know, weight maintenance, not always hormone therapy. Interestingly, at least birth control pills have not been shown to actually regulate these metabolic issues. This is a bigger thing. This is, you know, talking about caloric intake again, restoring weight management, talking about meeting the demands of exercise, cross training. Sometimes there's some role for hormone therapy in this, but again, it's not as simple as like, oh, just give you back a pill or something. It's really a multidisciplinary approach. And I do see women who have very low Z scores or low, which means they're lower in their bone mineral density than their average peers if they're in the premenopausal years. So we do those tests, I think, mostly if we have a problem or we're seeing, okay, we, you know, there's something we need to be concerned about here. And this could be signs of an end organ problem of these concerns.
Yeah. So it sounds like what you're saying, the hormones play this incredible role in the density of your bones. And so whether you're amenorrheic earlier in life or at some point during your life or entering perimenopause, postmenopause, you no longer have that estrogen there that's helping protect the bones. And so this is why the incidence, what are the stats? They're wild. Like in the first like 5 to 7 years postmenopause, it's something like you lose like 20% of your bone density. Am I right in that?
Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, again, this is always so nuanced. And we know we have so much information from looking at like the study of women across the nations, which is, again, a lot of these studies looking forward in time, like looking at women entering the menopause transition and then seeing what changes, what their sex hormone changes, what changes in their sleep, what changes in their mood, et cetera. And we have some, you know, helpful information to show that women in the menopause transition, whether that's the 1 to 2 years before, because remember, menopause is, you know, it's not just like one snapshot in time. Menopause is really a retrospective diagnosis of 12 months without a menstrual cycle if you're having sort of what we quote unquote natural menopause. But remember, menopause can be surgical. This can be induced by certain medications, chemotherapy, radiation, you know, even stress. So there's a lot of, you know, non natural menopause. But even before the 1 to 2 years before, we're starting to lose our estrogen, the FSH level starts to go up. And we know that the bone loss is starting then in the perimenopause and menopause. And that we can lose in the trabecular compartments, which is the compartment where we have more remodeling or more turnover of the bones, where the osteoclast or the bone breakdown cells sort of outpace the osteoblast or the bone forming cells. So we have a relative sort of imbalance of more bone resorption or breakdown than bone formation. And we just honestly just can't keep up. I kind of describe it as the teeter totter, you know, so the osteoclasts are winning. And this happens more prominently in the insides of the bone, the trabecular bone. The bone in the spine is primarily trabecular bone. So in our vertebral levels, sometimes we'll see a mismatch of more bone loss that happens in the spine in the bone mineral density scan versus the hip, the hips, which is generally more cortical bone, and those long bones of our body, which is sort of the external parts of the bone, is cortical bone or that denser bone. And so again, but we can still lose out of that compartment eventually as well. And so we might see those, again, we're not going to feel these changes as I talked about in the beginning. And this is why we think, you know, quote unquote, bone loss is a silent condition or osteoporosis is silent until you develop a fracture, which I really think, again, is sort of a misnomer, because so many women with fractures will tell you this is not a silent condition, right? They have pain, mobility issues, changes in their functioning, lifestyle. You know, women with vertebral fractures, this is significantly life altering, you know, in terms of, again, you know, how they can walk and move independently, the way that their sort of posture and balance changes, their center of balance, can affect the GI system, it can affect your lungs in terms of how you can take a deep breath, not to mention, again, when we move down the line of, you know, hip fractures, which are significant in terms of the risk of, you know, causing death and not being able to live or work independently again. So really significant, things that we can, again, work on the side of prevention and treatment if you have osteoporosis, right? Because, you know, we have a lot of ways to do that.
Hey, just a minute. I wanted to tell you about something brand new that we've been working on for you. It is a program called Inflammation Reset. So I've partnered up with Liz to bring you this course that teaches you how you can do this too. It comes with beautiful tutorials and interviews, information guides, meal plans, recipes, grocery lists, even a really fun grocery store tour. Just making the process of learning how to eat and live a more anti-inflammatory lifestyle really simple. We're still putting the finishing touches on this, but if you're interested, if you know you need this, you can join the waitlist right now by going to inflammationreset.com, and you will be the first to know when it's ready for you to get started. I will say that this course will probably not be available for purchase all by itself unless you're on this waitlist. Right now, our plan is to bundle this with the Back and Hip Fix program. So if you'd like to just grab Inflammation Reset, this is the only way to do it. This is your only opportunity. Okay. So go to inflammationreset.com, put your name on the waitlist, and in the next few weeks, you will have one of the best anti-inflammatory resources at your fingertips. But let's talk about prevention. So what are some of the best things that we can do starting today to help maintain the bone density, perhaps replace some of our bone density? You talked a little bit about how as we're getting older, our bones are kind of breaking down faster than we're able to repair them. And is there anything that we can do to alter that? And then what are some other prevention things that we can really be focusing on?
So there's a lot of things. And again, I think the first step is like the awareness, right? So most women I see, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do a bone density on you. And they're like, why? You know, like I haven't had a fracture or a fall. So I think this sort of awareness, and I think we're doing, this is my world that I live, breathe, and love, you know, the menopause, you know, world and midlife world. But I think like we're doing a better job at outreach and just like explaining, you know, menopause is more than hot flashes, and you know, there's a constellation of changes, and you know, these things are common and happening, and we should talk about them and we should address them or find someone that who can. So I think that's like the first step, right? Is the awareness. And then, you know, I think the second is to like I said, like sort of know your family history. So like ask about fractures, ask about osteoporosis. Have you had stress fractures yourself? Look at your own history. Like, have you had any, you know, ulcerative colitis, inflammatory bowel diseases, autoimmune conditions, diabetes, surgeries that might affect your calcium, vitamin D. So many women I see have vitamin D deficiency. They stop, eating dairy because potentially they think of lactose and they are lactose intolerant, or there's concerns that dairy is inflammatory or has affected other, conditions. So there's so much of that that before we even get to the menopause transition, we can, make sure that we're getting enough of our essential nutrients and vitamins like calcium, vitamin D, protein. Exercise is such a can of worms. There's so many different, if you ask a certain exercise professional, they'll say, my exercise is the best. And then someone else will say, my exercise is the best. So, and again, we should, the body likes movement, but we need to be smart about what we do. We also have time, lives, careers, jobs, families, community events, and the list goes on and on. So, in terms of exercise, I always try and say, try and the self-care simplified podcast, try and keep it simple, right? Do some aerobic exercise, do some resistance exercise, and then posture balance. Sometimes those three exercises can be combined into one, or you might do one or two on one day, one or two on another day. You can do some of these things quickly and easily when you're making oatmeal, when you're helping people brush teeth, when you're, at the park for a sports game, when you're in line at the grocery store, when you're holding a meeting. I mean, there's lots of different ways that you can incorporate some of these. So I try and figure out ways to do all of those things, because the reality is most people don't come just with bone health problems, right? They're thinking about their metabolism. They're thinking about their muscles, their joints, all of the things that are going to support them. So I think a lot about, again, lifestyle. It's huge. The medical history that they've come with and reproductive history. This is huge, right? This helps us, look at the next, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ahead as well. And then obviously to your question about how can we offset bone loss, getting enough calcium is really important, vitamin D. And then for women at the menopause transition, we know, from very good, studies, both the Women's Health Initiative study, as well as, the observational studies looking at women over time, that hormone therapy, we used to call it hormone replacement, it's called hormone therapy or menopausal hormone therapy at standard doses, whether that be a pill, a patch, a vaginal ring, a cream, a spray, et cetera, can offset bone loss. It does need to be done appropriately in women who, understand the risk-benefit alternatives and who are, this care is individualized, but we know this can reduce the risk of fractures, this can maintain bone mineral density, and oftentimes help with a lot of the other nagging menopausal symptoms like sleep or hot flashes or metabolism, vaginal dryness, et cetera. So again, this is an option. Sometimes this is limited in skew to gynecologists who might prescribe this, or, a women's health specialist. Sometimes this isn't the first go-to for women who might see an endocrinologist or rheumatologist, just because of their training being different and the current studies that we have. But again, we have some really good information to share that this does work. And we have other options for women of which hormone therapy is not an option. So there are medicines called SERMs, or selective estrogen receptor modulators, that actually are used to both reduce the risk of breast cancer and can help offset bone loss. And for women who don't have hot flashes, this can be a very good, and who are potentially a genetically higher risk of breast cancer, this can be a good option. And then, of course, there are a whole constellation of treatments for prevention of osteoporosis, which are medications like bisphosphonates and things that we prescribe for women who are intermediate to moderate fracture risk. Again, all in the vein of prevention of osteoporosis and prevention of fractures.
I love how when you were talking about the fitness aspect that you said, just move somehow, some way. I think we can sometimes overwhelm ourselves, like we're going to do the wrong thing, or it's not going to be, because you and I had talked off camera before that, it can get really overwhelming. That's about, there's so many new strategies out there. And it really just comes down to, don't be sedentary. It's probably one of the biggest dangers to bones. It's just not moving your body at all. Con, you mentioned inflammation earlier, how having chronic inflammation could impact our bone density. How is that? Why would one impact the other? Because I think sometimes we think of inflammation just maybe impacting how we feel our joints and our gut, but how could living, being chronically inflamed impact our bone density too?
Most of the research about like chronic inflammation or autoimmune conditions, like things like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, or, you know, any of these conditions that upregulate sort of the immune cells, comes because actually the macrophages, which again, now I'm getting sciencey, stick with me.
It's big words. I know.
the immune fighting cells, actually, the osteoclasts, which are the bone breakdown cells, are actually come from what we call like mononucleated macrophages, which are the immune fighting cells in our body. And so, you know, and even at the time of menopause, we know that, again, there's more of these immune fighting cells. There's more of the macrophages, which are differentiating or coming into becoming osteoclasts and bone breakdown cells. And there's a whole signaling pathway of hormones and other what we call cytokines that actually get thrown off a little bit at the time of menopause and midlife. So actually, there is a correlation with an uptick in autoimmune conditions or an uptick in things like asthma sometimes, or seasonal allergies, et cetera, because again, a lot of these, there's a disruption in the estrogen receptors at a lot of these areas. And so, you know, chronic inflammation, particularly things like we know from like chronic steroid use and other, you know, chronic conditions, you know, do have a detriment, you know, on the bone density and bone quality. So most of what we know is from those, and also sometimes the medications that we use to offset like the bone chronic inflammation, like steroids, like some of the medications in the rheumatologic, you know, world, et cetera. So, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, I think we also know that for cardiovascular disease, right, that chronic inflammation elevates, you know, certain blood tests that are concerning for cardiovascular disease. So these are things are all very much connected.
You've just given us like a lot to digest.
We're super, I talk fast.
No, this is great. This is so good. And definitely one that we'll want to listen to a handful of times. But just for a good takeaway, you know, what do you feel like is the most important thing that women need to know as they're going through menopause, maybe perimenopausal right now, postmenopausal, but what is the most important thing that they need to know for their bone health right now?
That's a hard one. I'm pretty long-winded, and I do like though that it's to keep it simple, I think is such a good message, because there are so many competing demands, you know, at the time of menopause. So many things are changing, as we talked about. And I think we sometimes wait until it's like we're having hot flashes, we can't sleep, maybe the anxiety has gotten, you know, bad. Oh, I'm bleeding every 2 weeks now, and I don't think this is normal. You know, sometimes the wait and see approach is not always the best approach. And so I think, again, being proactive about the symptoms and also signs in the menopause and perimenopause is really important. And I think specifically if we're talking about bone health, I think, you know, doing at least a bone health assessment is really important, whether that is a DEXA scan that you can get a physician to order, or you can find, there are some, you know, commercial options for DEXA. I'm a little bit skeptical to recommend some of those, just because, again, they kind of give a whole body DEXA and they bone mineral density, and they do not give like the fractions that we know are sort of scientifically validated, like the femoral neck, the total hip, and the spine bone mineral density, and understand, and also to have someone explain and understand that for you is important, because otherwise it's just a jumble of numbers. And so I think it's important to either do a bone health assessment where you think about the things that we've talked about here, like what does my calcium look like intake? What is my vitamin D level? What about my medical history might put me at an increased risk for bone loss or a fracture? Should I get a DEXA scan? In my mind, it would probably be like, yes. There are some other tools that you can use, but generally also looking at your age and your BMI and things, because again, we know that advancing age, but we're talking about women in their 40s, 50s here. So depending on when menopause occurs, the age is not the strongest risk factor for fractures at that age, but again, or low body mass is. So that's one thing that we can be, you know, thinking about, one risk factor for bone loss. So I really think, again, doing a bone health assessment, thinking about your calcium, your vitamin D intake, thinking about the, you know, the exercise that you're doing, and trying to, again, incorporate those sort of the trifecta of the three that we talked about. I know it's hard. There's a lot of competing demands. Keeping that simple. And then again, just addressing like perimenopause and menopause, you know, when women are between, you know, certain age, maybe let's say 35 to even, you know, maybe 40 to 50, 55, anything new, anything changing, this is most likely related to, you know, shifts in hormones, and that should be addressed.
You know, it's kind of this very similar message that I love getting from other menopausal experts that I get the chance to talk with. And it's really just awareness. It really starts with just educating yourself and seeing where you're at. You know, we're all a little different, but taking the time to prioritize your own self-care, prioritize the health of your body, and just speaking up. Because like you said, it's kind of the silent thing. We can't feel if our bones are getting thin. And we can't tell unless we have this level of awareness and go seek it out on our own. So thank you so much for educating us today. This is really, really helpful to kind of know where we're at. And hopefully it's the first steps for a lot of us to feel like we have stronger bones for the next few years.
I am so happy you had us to talk about this important topic. And May is Osteoporosis Awareness Month. So that is just an exciting also time to have this discussion.